Physics by Aristotle. Book 5. Section 1. Everything which changes does so in one of three senses. It may change, 1. Accidentally, as for instance, when we say that something musical walks, that which walks being something in which aptitude for music is an accident. Again, 2, a thing is said without qualification to change, because something belonging to it changes. That is, in statements which refer to a part of the thing in question. Thus, the body is restored to health because the eye, or the chest, that is to say, a part of the whole body, is restored to health. And above all, there is 3, the case of a thing which is in motion, neither accidentally nor in respect of something else belonging to it, but in virtue of being itself directly in motion. Here we have a thing which is essentially movable, and that which is so a different thing according to the particular variety of motion. For instance, it may be a thing capable of alteration, and within the sphere of alteration it is again a different thing according as it is capable of being restored to health or capable of being heated. And there are the same distinctions in the case of the mover. 1. One thing causes motion accidentally. 2. Another partially, because something belonging to it causes motion. 3. Another of itself directly, as for instance, the physician heals, the hand strikes. We have then the following factors. A. On the one hand, that which directly causes motion, and B. On the other hand, that which is in motion. Further, we have C. That in which motion takes place, namely time, and distinct from these 3. D. That from which, and E, that to which it proceeds. For every motion proceeds from something and to something, that which is directly in motion being distinct from that to which it is in motion and that from which it is in motion. For instance, we may take the 3 things, wood, hot, and cold, of which the first is that which is in motion, the second is that to which the motion proceeds, and the third is that from which it proceeds. This being so, it is clear that the motion is in the wood, not in its form, for the motion is neither caused nor experienced by the form or the place or the quantity. So we are left with a mover, a moved, and a goal of motion. I do not include the starting point of motion, for it is the goal rather than the starting point of motion that gives its name to a particular process of change. Thus, perishing is changed to not being, though it is also true that that which perishes changes from being, and becoming is change to being, though it is also change from not being. Now a definition of motion has been given above, from which it will be seen that every goal of motion, whether it be a form, an affection, or a place, is immovable, as for instance knowledge and heat. Here, however, a difficulty may be raised. Affections, it may be said, are motions, and whiteness is an affection. Thus, there may be change to a motion. To this we may reply that it is not whiteness, but whitening that is a motion. Here also the same distinctions are to be observed. A goal of motion may be so accidentally or partially and with reference to something other than itself, or directly and with no reference to anything else. For instance, a thing which is becoming white changes accidentally to an object of thought, the color being only accidentally the object of thought. It changes to color because white is a part of color, or to Europe because Athens is a part of Europe. But it changes essentially to white color. It is now clear in what sense a thing is in motion essentially, accidentally, or in respect of something other than itself, and in what sense the phrase itself directly is used in the case both of the mover and of the moved. And it is also clear that the motion is not in the form, but in that which is in motion, that is to say, the movable in activity. Now, accidental change we may leave out of account, for it is to be found in everything, at any time, and in any respect. Change which is not accidental, on the other hand, is not to be found in everything, but only in contraries, in things intermediate contraries, and in contradictories, as may be proved by induction. An intermediate may be a starting point of change, since for the purposes of the change it serves as contrary to either of 2 contraries, for the intermediate is in a sense the extremes. Hence, we speak of the intermediate as in a sense a contrary relatively to the extremes, and of either extreme as a contrary relatively to the intermediate. For instance, the central note is low relatively to the highest and high relatively to the lowest, and gray is light relatively to black and dark relatively to white. And since every change is from something to something, as the word itself, metabol, indicates, implying something after meta, something else, that is to say, something earlier and something later, that which changes must change in one of four ways: from subject to subject, from subject to non-subject, from non-subject to subject, or from non-subject to non-subject, whereby subject I mean what is affirmatively expressed. So it follows necessarily from what has been said above that there are only three kinds of change: that from subject to subject, that from subject to non-subject, and that from non-subject to subject. For the fourth conceivable kind, that from non-subject to non-subject, is not change, as in that case there is no opposition either of contraries or of contradictories. Now, change being non-subject to subject, the relation being that of contradiction, is coming to be, unqualified coming to be, when the change takes place in an unqualified way, particular coming to be, when the change is change in a particular character. For instance, a change from not white to white is a coming to be of the particular thing, white, while change from the unqualified not being to being is coming to be in an unqualified way, in respect of which we say that a thing comes to be without qualification, not that it comes to be some particular thing. Change from subject to non-subject is perishing, unqualified perishing, when the change is from being to not being, particular perishing when the change is to the opposite negation, the distinction being the same as that made in the case of coming to be. Now, the expression not being is used in several senses, and there can be motion neither of that which is not in respect of the affirmation or negation of a predicate, nor of that which is not in the sense that it only potentially is, that is to say, the opposite of that which actually is in an unqualified sense. For although that which is not white or not good may nevertheless be in motion accidentally, for example, that which is not white might be a man, yet that which is without qualification, not so-and-so, cannot in any sense be in motion. Therefore, it is impossible for that which is not to be in motion. This being so, it follows that becoming cannot be a motion, for it is that which is not that becomes. Or however true it may be that it accidentally becomes, it is nevertheless correct to say that it is that which is not that in an unqualified sense becomes, and similarly it is impossible for that which is not to be at rest. There are these difficulties, then, in the way of the assumption that that which is not can be in motion, and it may be further objected that, whereas everything which is in motion is in space, that which is not in space, for then it would be somewhere. So too perishing is not a motion, for motion has for its contrary either another motion or rest, whereas perishing is the contrary of becoming. Since then every motion is a kind of change, and there are only the three kinds of change mentioned above, and since of these three, those which take the form of becoming and perishing, that is to say, those which imply a relation of contradiction, are not motions, it necessarily follows that only change from subject to subject is motion. And every such subject is either a contrary or an intermediate, for a privation may be allowed to rank as a contrary, and can be affirmatively expressed, as naked, toothless, or black. If, then, the categories are severally distinguished as being, quality, place, time, relation, quantity, and activity or passivity, it necessarily follows that there are three kinds of motion: qualitative, quantitative, and local. Section 2. In respect of substance, there is no motion, because substance has no contrary among things that are. Nor is there motion in respect of relation, for it may happen that when one correlative changes, the other, although this does not itself change, is no longer applicable, so that in these cases the motion is accidental. Nor is there motion in respect of agent and patient. In fact, there can never be motion of mover and moved, because there cannot be motion of motion, or becoming of becoming, or in general change of change. For in the first place, there are two senses in which motion of motion is conceivable. One, the motion of which there is motion might be conceived as subject. For example, a man is in motion because he changes from fair to dark. Can it be that in this sense motion grows hot or cold, or changes place, or increases or decreases? Impossible, for a change is not a subject. Or, two, can there be motion of motion in the sense that some other subject changes from a change to another mode of being, as, for example, a man changes from falling ill to getting well? Even this is possible only in an accidental sense, for whatever the subject may be, movement is change from one form to another. And the same holds good of becoming and perishing, except that in these processes we have a change to a particular kind of opposite, while the other, motion, is a change to a different kind. So, if there is to be motion of motion, that which is changing from health to sickness must simultaneously be changing from this very change to another. It is clear, then, that by the time that it has become sick, it must also have changed to whatever may be the other change concerned, for that it should be at rest, though logically possible, is excluded by the theory. Moreover, this other can never be any casual change, but must be a change from something definite to some other definite thing. So in this case, it must be the opposite change, for example, convalescence. It is only accidentally that there can be change of change. Example, there is change from remembering to forgetting, only because the subject of this change changes at one time to knowledge, at another to ignorance. In the second place, if there is to be change of change and becoming of becoming, we shall have an infinite regress. Thus, if one of a series of changes is to be a change of change, the preceding change must also be so. For example, if simple becoming was ever in process of becoming, then that which was becoming simple, becoming was also in process of becoming, so that we should not yet have arrived at what was in process of simple becoming, but only at what was already in process of becoming in process of becoming. And this again was sometimes in process of becoming, so that even then we should not have arrived at what was in process of simple becoming. And since in an infinite series there is no first term, here there will be no first stage, and therefore no following stage either. On this hypothesis, then, nothing can become, or be moved, or change. Thirdly, if a thing is capable of any particular motion, it is also capable of the corresponding contrary motion, or the corresponding coming to rest, and a thing that is capable of becoming is also capable of perishing. Consequently, if there be becoming of becoming, that which is in process of becoming is in process of perishing at the very moment when it has reached the stage of becoming. Since it cannot be in process of perishing when it is just beginning to become, or after it has ceased to become, for that which is in process of perishing must be in existence. Fourthly, there must be a substrate underlying all processes of becoming and changing. What can this be in the present case? It is either the body or the soul that undergoes alteration. What is it that correspondingly becomes motion or becoming? And again, what is the goal of the motion? It must be the motion or becoming of something from something to something else. But in what sense can this be so? For the becoming of learning cannot be learning, so neither can the becoming of becoming be becoming, nor can the becoming of any process be that process. Finally, since there are three kinds of motion, the substratum and the goal of motion must be one or other of these. For example, locomotion will have to be altered or to be locally moved. To sum up, then, since everything that is moved in one of three ways, either accidentally, or partially, or essentially, change can change only accidentally, as, for example, when a man who is being restored to health runs or learns, and accidental change we have long ago decided to leave out of account. Since, then, motion can belong neither to being nor to relation, nor to agent and patient, it remains that there can be motion only in respect of quality, quantity, and place. For with each of these we have a pair of contraries. Motion in respect of quality let us call alteration, a general designation that is used to include both contraries, and by quality I do not mean here a property of substance, in that sense that which constitutes a specific distinction is a quality, but a passive quality in virtue of which a thing is said to be acted on, or to be incapable of being acted on. Motion in respect of quantity has no name that includes both contraries, but it is called increase or decrease according as one or the other is designated. That is to say, motion in the direction of complete magnitude is increase, motion in the contrary direction is decrease. Motion in respect of place has no name either general or particular, but we may designate it by the general name of locomotion, though strictly the term locomotion is applicable to things that change their place only when they have not the power to come to a stand, and to things that do not move themselves locally. Change within the same kind, from a lesser to a greater, or from a greater to a lesser degree, is alteration, for it is motion either from a contrary or to a contrary, whether in an unqualified or in a qualified sense, for change to a lesser degree of quality will be called change to the contrary of that quality, and change to a greater degree of quality will be regarded as change from the contrary of that quality to the quality itself. It makes no difference whether the change be qualified or unqualified, except that in the former case, the contraries will have to be contrary to one another only in a qualified sense, and a thing's possessing a quality in a greater or in a lesser degree means the presence or absence in it of more or less of the opposite quality. It is now clear, then, that there are only these three kinds of motion. The term immovable we apply in the first place to that which is absolutely incapable of being moved, just as we correspondingly applied the term invisible to sound. In the second place, to that which is moved with difficulty after a long time, or whose movement is slow at the start in fact, what we describe as hard to move. And in the third place, to that which is naturally designed for and capable of motion, but is not in motion when, where, and as it naturally would be so. The last is the only kind of immovable thing of which I use the term being at rest, for rest is contrary to motion, so that rest will be negation of motion in that which is capable of admitting motion. The foregoing remarks are sufficient to explain the essential nature of motion and rest, the number of kinds of change, and the different varieties of motion. Section 3. Let us now proceed to define the terms together and apart, in contact, between, in succession, contiguous, and continuous, and to show in what circumstances each of these terms is naturally applicable. Things are said to be together in place when they are in one place, in the strictest sense of the word place, and to be apart when they are in different places. Things are said to be in contact when their extremities are together. That which a changing thing, if it changes continuously in a natural manner, naturally reaches before it, reaches that to which it changes last, is between. Thus between implies the presence of at least three things. For in a process of change, it is the contrary that is last, and a thing is moved continuously if it leaves no gap, or only the smallest possible gap in the material, not in the time, for a gap in the time does not prevent things having a between, while on the other hand, there is nothing to prevent the highest note sounding immediately after the lowest, but in the material in which the motion takes place. This is manifestly true not only in local changes, but in every other kind as well. Now every change implies a pair of opposites, and opposites may be either contraries or contradictories. Since then contradiction admits of no mean term, it is obvious that between must imply a pair of contraries. That is locally contrary which is most distant in a straight line. For the shortest line is definitely limited, and that which is definitely limited constitutes a measure. A thing is in succession when it is after the beginning in position or in form or in some other respect in which it is definitely so regarded, and when further there is nothing of the same kind as itself between it and that to which it is in succession. For example, a line or lines if it is to be a line, a unit or units if it is to be a unit, a house if it is to be a house, there is nothing to prevent something of a different kind being between. For that which is in succession to a particular thing, and is something posterior. For one is not in succession to two, nor is the first day of the month to be second. In each case, the latter is in succession to the former. A thing that is in succession and touches is contiguous. The continuous is a subdivision of the contiguous. Things are called continuous when the touching limits of each become one and the same, and are, as the word implies, contained in each other. Continuity is impossible if these extremities are two. This definition makes it plain that continuity belongs to things that naturally, in virtue of their mutual contact, form a unity. And in whatever way that which holds them together is one, so too will the whole be one. For example, by a rivet, or glue, or contact, or organic union. It is obvious that of these terms in succession is first in order of analysis, for that which touches is necessarily in succession, but not everything that is in succession touches, and so succession is a property of things prior in definition, for example, numbers, while contact is not, and if there is continuity, there is necessarily contact, but if there is contact, that alone does not imply continuity, for the extremities of things may be together without necessarily being one, but they cannot be one without being necessarily together. So natural junction is last in coming to be, for the extremities must necessarily come into contact if they are to be naturally joined. But things that are in contact are not all naturally joined. While there is no contact, clearly there is no natural junction either. Hence, if, as some say, point and unit have an independent existence of their own, it is impossible for the two to be identical, for points can touch while units can only be in succession. Moreover, there can always be something between points, for all lines are intermediate between points, whereas it is not necessary that there should be possibly anything between units, for there can be nothing between the numbers 1 and 2. We have now defined what is meant by together and apart, contact, between, and in succession, contiguous and continuous, and we have shown in what circumstances each of these terms is applicable. Section 4. There are many senses in which motion is said to be one, for we use the term one in many senses. Motion is one generically, according to the different categories to which it may be assigned. Thus, any locomotion is one generically with any other locomotion, whereas alteration is different generically from locomotion. Motion is one specifically when besides being one generically. It also takes place in a series incapable of subdivision. For example, color has specific differences. Therefore, blackening and whitening differ specifically. But at all events, every whitening will be specifically the same with every other whitening, and every blackening with every other blackening. But white is not further subdivided by specific differences. Hence, any whitening is specifically one with any other whitening. Where it happens that the genus is at the same time a species, it is clear that the motion will then, in a sense, be one specifically, though not in an unqualified sense. Learning is an example of this, knowledge being on the one hand a species of apprehension, and on the other hand, a genus, including the various knowledges. A difficulty, however, may be raised as to whether a motion is specifically one when the same thing changes from the same to the same. For example, when one point changes again and again from a particular place to a particular place. If this motion is specifically one, circular motion will be the same as rectilinear motion, and rolling the same as walking. But is not this difficulty removed by the principle already laid down, that if that in which the motion takes place is specifically different, as in the present instance the circular path is specifically different from the straight, the motion itself is also different? We have explained, then, what is meant by saying that motion is one generically or one specifically. Motion is one in an unqualified sense when it is one essentially or numerically, and the following distinctions will make clear what this kind of motion is. There are three classes of things in connection with which we speak of motion: the that which, the that in which, and the that during which. I mean that there must be something that is in motion, for example, a man or gold, and it must be in motion in something, for example, a place or an affection, and during something, for all motion takes place during a time. Of these three, it is the thing in which the motion takes place that makes it one generically or specifically. It is the thing removed that makes the motion one in subject, and it is the time that makes it consecutive. But it is the three together that make it one without qualification. To effect this, that in which the motion takes place, the species, must be one and incapable of subdivision. That during which it takes place, the time must be one and unintermittent, and that which is in motion must be one not in an accidental sense, that is, it must be one as the white that blackens is one, or Coriscus who walks is one, not in the accidental sense in which Coriscus and white may be one, nor merely in virtue of community of nature, for there might be a case of two men being restored to health at the same time in the same way. An example from inflammation of the eye. Yet this motion is not really one, but only specifically one. Suppose, however, that Socrates undergoes an alteration specifically the same, but at one time and again at another. In this case, if it is possible for that which ceased to be again to come into being and remain numerically the same, then this motion too will be one. Otherwise, it will be the same, but not one, and akin to this difficulty, there is another, the health one. And, generally, are the states and affections in bodies severally one in essence, although, as is clear, the things that contain them are obviously in motion and in flux? Thus, if a person's health at daybreak and at the present moment is one and the same, why should not this health be numerically one with that which he recovers after an interval? The same argument applies in each case. There is, however, we may answer, this difference, that if the states are two, then, It follows simply from this fact that the activities must also in point of number be two, for only that which is numerically one can give rise to an activity that is numerically one. But if the state is one, this is not in itself enough to make us regard the activity also as one. For when a man ceases walking, the walking no longer is, but it will again be if he begins to walk again. But, be this as it may, if in the above instance the health is one and the same, then it must be possible for that which is one and the same to come to be and to cease to be many times. However, these difficulties lie outside our present inquiry. Since every motion is continuous, a motion that is one in an unqualified sense must, since every motion is divisible, be continuous, and a continuous motion must be one. There will not be continuity between any motion and any other indiscriminately any more than there is between any two things chosen at random in any other sphere. There can be continuity only when the extremities of the two things are one. Now some things have no extremities at all, and the extremities of others differ specifically, although we give them the same name of end. How should, for example, the end of a line and the end of walking touch or come to be one? Motions that are not the same either specifically or generically may, it is true, be consecutive. For example, a man may run and then at once fall ill of a fever, and again in the torch race we have consecutive but not continuous locomotion. For according to our definition, there can be continuity only when the ends of the two things are one. Hence, motions may be consecutive or successive in virtue of the time being continuous, but there can be continuity only in virtue of the motions themselves being continuous, that is, when the end of each is one with the end of the other. Motion, therefore, that is, in an unqualified sense continuous, and one must be specifically the same of one thing and in one time. Unity is required in respect of time in order that there may be no interval of immobility, for where there is intermission of motion, there must be rest. And a motion that includes intervals of rest will be not one, but many, so that a motion that is interrupted by stationariness is not one or continuous, and it is so interrupted if there is an interval of time. And though of a motion that is not specifically one, even if the time is unintermittent, the time is one, the motion is specifically different, and so cannot really be one. For motion that is one must be specifically one, though motion that is specifically one is not necessarily one in an unqualified sense. We have now explained what we mean when we call a motion one without qualification. Further, a motion is also said to be one generically, specifically, or essentially when it is complete, just as in other cases completeness and wholeness are characteristics of what is one, and sometimes a motion, even if incomplete, is said to be one, provided only that it is continuous. And besides the cases already mentioned, there is another in which a motion is said to be one, when it is regular. For in a sense, a motion that is irregular is not regarded as one, that title belonging rather to that which is regular, as a straight line is regular, the irregular being as such divisible. But the difference would seem to be one of degree. In every kind of motion, we may have regularity or irregularity. Thus, there may be regular alteration and locomotion in a regular path, for example, in a circle or on a straight line, and it is the same with regard to increase and decrease. The difference that makes a motion irregular is sometimes to be found in its path. Thus, a motion cannot be regular if its path is an irregular magnitude, for example, a broken line, a spiral, or any other magnitude that is not such that any part of it taken at random fits on to any other that may be chosen. Sometimes it is found neither in the place, nor in the time, nor in the goal, but in the manner of the motion, for in some cases the motion is differentiated by quickness and slowness. Thus, if its velocity is uniform, a motion is regular. If not, it is irregular. So quickness and slowness are not species of motion, nor do they constitute specific differences of motion, because this distinction occurs in connection with all the distinct species of motion. The same is true of heaviness and lightness when they refer to the same thing. For example, they do not specifically distinguish earth from itself or fire from itself. Irregular motion, therefore, while in virtue of being continuous it is one, it is so in a lesser degree, as is the case with locomotion in a broken line. And a lesser degree of something always means an admixture of its contrary. And since every motion that is one can be both regular and irregular, motions that are consecutive but not specifically the same cannot be one and continuous. For how should a motion composed of alteration and locomotion be regular? If a motion is to be regular, its parts ought to fit one another. Section 5. We are further to determine what motions are contrary to each other, and to determine similarly how it is with rest. And we have first to decide whether contrary motions are motions respectively from and to the same thing. For example, a motion from health and a motion to health, where the opposition, it would seem, is of the same kind as that between coming to be and ceasing to be, or motions respectively from contraries. For example, a motion from health and a motion from disease, or motions respectively to contraries. For example, a motion to health and a motion to disease, or motions respectively from a contrary and to the opposite contrary. A motion from health and a motion to disease, or motions respectively from a contrary to the opposite contrary and from the latter to the former. For example, a motion from health to disease and a motion from disease to health. For motions must be contrary to one another in one or more of these ways, as there is no other way in which they can be opposed. Now, motions respectively from a contrary and to the opposite contrary, for example, a motion from health and a motion to disease, are not contrary motions, for they are one and the same. Yet their essence is not the same, just as changing from health is different from changing to disease. Nor are motion respectively from a contrary and from the opposite contrary contrary motions. For a motion from a contrary is at the same time a motion to a contrary or to an intermediate. Of this, however, we shall speak later. But changing to a contrary rather than changing from a contrary would seem to be the cause of the contrariety of motions, the latter being the loss, the former the gain of contrariness. Moreover, each several motion takes its name rather from the goal than from the starting point of change. For example, motion to health we call convalescence, motion to disease, sickening. Thus we are left with motions respectively to contraries, and motions respectively to contraries from the opposite contraries. Now, it would seem that motions to contraries are at the same time motions from contraries, though their essence may not be the same. To health is distinct, I mean from disease and from health, from to disease. Since then, change differs from motion, motion being changed from a particular subject to a particular subject. It follows that contrary motions are motions respectively from a contrary to the opposite contrary, and from the latter to the former. For example, a motion from health to disease and a motion from disease to health. Moreover, the consideration of particular examples will also show what kinds of processes are generally recognized as contrary. Thus, falling ill is regarded as contrary to recovering one's health, these processes having contrary goals and being taught as contrary to being led into error by another, it being possible to acquire error, like knowledge, either by one's own agency or by that of another. Similarly, we have upward locomotion and downward locomotion, which are contrary lengthwise, locomotion to the right, and locomotion to the left, which are contrary breadthwise, and forward locomotion and backward locomotion, which too are contraries. On the other hand, a process simply to a contrary, for example, that denoted by the expression becoming white, where no starting point is specified, is a change but not a motion. And in all cases of a thing that has no contrary, we have as contraries change from and change to the same thing. Thus becoming to be is contrary to ceasing to be, and losing to gaining. But these are changes and not motions. And whenever a pair of contraries admit of an intermediate, motions to that intermediate must be held to be, in a sense, motions to one or other of the contraries, for the intermediate serves as a contrary for the purposes of the motion, in whichever direction the change may be. For example, gray in a motion from gray to white takes the place of black as a starting point. In a motion from white to gray, it takes the place of black as a goal. And in a motion from black to gray, it takes the place of white as a goal. For the middle is exposed, in a sense, to either of the extremes, as has been said above. Thus we see that two motions are contrary to each other only when one motion is from a contrary to the opposite contrary, and the other is a motion from the latter to the former. Section 6. But since a motion appears to have contrary to it not only another motion, but also a state of rest, we must determine how this is so. A motion has for its contrary, in the strict sense of the term, another motion. But it also has for an opposite a state of rest, for rest is the privation of motion, and the privation of anything may be called its contrary. And motion of one kind has for its opposite rest of that kind, for example, local motion has local rest. This statement, however, needs further qualification. There remains the question, is the opposite of remaining at a particular place motion from or motion to that place? It is surely clear that since there are two subjects between which motion takes place, motion from one of these, A, to its contrary, B, has for its opposite remaining in A, while the reverse motion has for its opposite remaining in B. At the same time, these two are also contrary to each other, for it would be absurd to suppose that there are contrary motions and not opposite states of rest. States of rest in contraries are opposed. To take an example, a state of rest in health is, 1, contrary to a state of rest in disease, and 2, the motion to which it is contrary is that from health to disease. For 2, it would be absurd that its contrary motion should be that from disease to health, since motion to that in which a thing is at rest is rather a coming to rest, the coming to rest being found to come into being simultaneously with the motion, and one of these two motions it must be. And 1, rest is whiteness, is of course not contrary to rest in health. Of all things that have no contraries, there are opposite changes, change from the thing and change to the thing, example, change from being and change to being, but no motion. So too, of such things, there is no remaining, though there is absence of change. Should there be a particular subject, absence of change in its being will be contrary to absence of change in its not being. And here a difficulty may be raised. If not being is not a particular something, what is it, may be asked, that is contrary to absence of change in a thing's being? And is this absence of change a state of rest? If it is, then either it is not true that every state of rest is contrary to a motion, or else coming to be and ceasing to be are motion. It is clear then that since we exclude these from among motions, we must not say that this absence of change is a state of rest. We must say that it is similar to a state of rest and call it absence of change. And it will have for its contrary either nothing or absence of change in the thing's not being, or the ceasing to be of the thing, for which ceasing to be is change from it, and the thing's coming to be is change to it. Again, a further difficulty may be raised. How is it, it may be asked, that whereas in local change both remaining and moving may be natural or unnatural, in the other changes this is not so? For example, alteration is not now natural and now unnatural, for convalescence is no more natural or unnatural than falling ill, whitening no more natural or unnatural than blackening, so too with increase and decrease. These are not contrary to each other in the sense that either of them is natural while the other is unnatural, nor is one increase contrary to another in this sense, and the same account may be given of becoming and perishing. It is not true that becoming is natural and perishing unnatural, for growing old is natural, nor do we observe one becoming to be natural and another unnatural. We answer that if what happens under violence is unnatural, then violent perishing is unnatural, and as such contrary to natural perishing. Are there then also some becomings that are violent and not the result of natural necessity, and are therefore contrary to natural becomings, and violent increases and decreases, for example, the rapid growth to maturity of profligates and the rapid ripening of seeds even when not packed close to the earth? And how is it with alterations? Surely just the same. We may say that some alterations are violent while others are natural. For example, patients alter naturally or unnaturally according as they throw off fevers on the critical days or not. But, it may be objected, then we shall have perishings contrary to one another, not to becoming. Certainly. And why should not this in a sense be so? Thus it is so if one perishing is pleasant and another painful, and so one perishing will be contrary to another, not in an unqualified sense, but in so far as one has this quality and the other that. Now motions and states of rests universally exhibit contrariety in the manner described above. For example, upward motion and rest above are respectively contrary to downward motion and rest below, these being instances of local contrariety, and upward locomotion belongs naturally to fire and downward to earth. That is, the locomotions of the two are contrary to each other. And again, fire moves up naturally and down unnaturally, and its natural motion is certainly contrary to its unnatural motion. Similarly, with remaining. Remaining above is contrary to motion from above downwards, and to earth this remaining comes unnaturally, this motion naturally. So the unnatural remaining of a thing is contrary to its natural motion, just as we find a similar contrariety in the motion of the same thing. One of its motions, the upward or the downward, will be natural, the other unnatural. Here, however, the question arises, has every state of rest that is not permanent a becoming, and is this becoming a coming to a standstill? If so, there must be a becoming of that which is at rest unnaturally, for example, of earth at rest above, and therefore this earth, during the time that it was being carried violently upward, was coming to a standstill. But whereas the velocity of that which comes to a standstill seems always to increase, the velocity of that which is carried violently seems always to decrease, so it will be in a state of rest without having become so. Moreover, coming to a standstill is generally recognized to be identical, or at least concomitant, with the locomotion of a thing to its proper place. There is also another difficulty involved in the view that remaining in a particular place is contrary to motion from that place, for when a thing is moving from or discarding something, it still appears to have that which is being discarded. So that, if a state of rest is itself contrary to the motion from the state of rest to its contrary, the contrary's rest and motion will be simultaneously predicable of the same thing. May we not say, however, that in so far as the thing is still stationary, it is in a state of rest in a qualified sense? For, in fact, whenever a thing is in motion, part of it is at the same starting point while part of it is at the goal to which it is changing. And consequently, a motion finds its true contrary rather in another motion than in a state of rest. With regard to motion and rest, then, we have now explained in what sense each of them is one and under what conditions they exhibit contrariety. With regards to coming to a standstill, the question may be raised whether there is an opposite state of rest to unnatural as well as to natural motions. It would be absurd if this were not the case, for a thing may remain still merely under violence. Thus, we shall have a thing being in a non-permanent state of rest without having become so. But it is clear that it must be the case, for just as there is unnatural motion, so too a thing may be in an unnatural state of rest. Further, some things have a natural and an unnatural motion. For example, fire has a natural upward motion and an unnatural downward motion. Is it then this unnatural downward motion, or is it the natural downward motion of earth that is contrary to the natural upward motion? Surely it is clear that both are contrary to it, though not in the same sense. The natural motion of earth is contrary inasmuch as the motion of fire is also natural, whereas the upward motion of fire as being natural is contrary to the downward motion of fire as being unnatural. The same is true of the corresponding cases remaining. But there would seem to be a sense in which a state of rest and a motion are opposites. The end of Book 5. Read by Rick Kistner for Lit2Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.